Randall Tarley is the finest soldier in the realm. Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chomp, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons licensed music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3. And at least in the Midwest realm, so's Greg Atkinson.
Yay.
He had to crush his friends to do it.
He didn't have to crush me for the one time ever he didn't have to play me.
Actually, Will, it's been a long time since we played in Joust at a major event. It used to be we played it every event, but it's actually been, I think, over a year.
Wow. Now Kristen's drawing the short straw, I guess.
Yeah, Kristen plays me at every event, which pisses her off. But, in a weird twist of fate, I played Greyjoy TLV 3 times, of which one was Kristen, and she might have given me the best game.
That's interesting. I think we'll need to hear more details on that in a little bit, actually. So for listeners that may not have figured out anything yet, this week I've got myself, Will Lentz Kennan, who may sound a little different. My voice is still not completely back. I woke up without one this weekend during the tournament prior any partying.
You're still talking about voices, right?
Yes.
Okay. You said you woke up without one, so I kind of figured that's kind of an everyday thing for you. So.
Yeah, exactly. That could be damn near anything. And then who else do I have with me this week, guys?
Greg Atkinson, Dobler on the boards.
Daryl Lloyd, Gearhalt on the boards.
Oh. I don't even know why you say that, Daryl. You post like three times a year.
I'm on Card Game DB
He posts on Card Game DB some, generally when he's drunk.
You should just say, this is Daryl. Everybody knows.
Not necessarily everybody realizes it's him on the forums. I'm not dead certain when he posted that TLV thread that everyone knew that was Daryl, because it, you know, it appeared to be a an interesting, you know, cogent thread.
Yes,
I don't even know what thread you're talking about.
Over on the main CGDB boards, Daryl basically said, "Well, what was Daryl something about? Is it overrated or are we crazy or something like that?"
I can't remember what I named it. Let me check. It was like, are we all insane or is TLV that good?
Yeah.
Where basically I talked about how we're getting two more agendas that are coming out and if people are going to bother to play those as opposed to just play the Long Voyage. And I just wanted to gauge the community's, perspective of, you know, the card itself and what it does for the game, you know. Yeah.
And the discussion went to like 7 pages or something. So it's an active forum over on Card Game DB.
To the main Game of Thrones boards.
Yeah, I loved the mothership, so to speak, for a very long time. But unfortunately, the place is pretty dead right now, and I think that's due to the performance of the site. So if you're looking for somewhere a little faster, feel free to move on over to Card Game DB, because things have been getting busier and busier over there.
Yeah.
See, now I didn't even know they had an active forum over there. When you were talking about Daryl posting on the forums, I thought you meant the main one. So.
Oh, gotcha. No, there's pretty dang active forums for all the games right now.
Yeah.
Except maybe Warhammer's not super active, but the others are all moving.
Yeah, I need to get on the Star Wars part of it, but.
Yeah, I was just reading some of that today, actually.
Yeah. That thread did pretty good. We had 170 replies with almost 3,200 views. So that's pretty good little thread there. I don't post often, but when I do, and it's not in the drunk thread, I tend to try to make it count.
Good man, good man. Well, you know what else I was reading lately today? A little bit of news out of that FFG main site. Did you guys catch the info about the Feast for Crows expansion?
I did not.
Oh, man. I'm probably the only person that still reads the site actually just looking for announcements. It's another print and on-demand expansion for the Game of Thrones board game, second edition. And it looks like it changes everything up, and it says basically that it tries to kind of reset the houses and like their starting places and everything to be more in line with book 4 of the series. So it includes a bunch of new cards kind of tweaks what's where, and then adds a whole brand new house. It adds House Arryn, which you can see somebody on a bit of art on the front of the package. And you can see a few of the Arryn, like, command cards spread out. I can't really narrow down who that is, but it's some sick-looking art. And I've got to say, it really makes me wonder. I mean, I know I've seen, looking at the Game of Thrones board game second edition, that a bunch of that art is from various sets of the Thrones card game, be it... CCG or LCG, they've kind of pulled a little bit from here and there. It really makes me hopeful that maybe we're going to see some of this art for the Arryns pop up as, say, an Arryn expansion. We haven't had a deluxe set in forever.
I don't know. I can't see them really doing House Arryn, but maybe. I don't know. I know that they had a lot of CCG cards, didn't they?
Yeah, they had a whole set to mostly devoted to them anyway. They were a neutral faction in that game, or in that era of the game.
I can't really get excited about the board game or House Arryn. It's just meh to me.
Man, have you ever actually played the board game, Greg?
No.
Wow, I was going to say the board game is really fun.
Especially the second edition plays a lot more smoothly. They fixed a couple little quirks. But, oh, well. Well, maybe we have news that would be more exciting for you, Greg.
Regarding House Arryn?
Not quite. Almost. Maybe another house that had a set mostly devoted to them in the CCG days.
Regarding House Tyrell?
Close. Very, very close. One of their bannermen, perhaps. Now, I want to preface this next bit real quick by pointing out this is in regards to the mystery email that I mentioned on Facebook. Some folks seemed a little skeptical that I would follow through and anything would come of it, but we got everything sorted out, and I am pleased to announce that we have an official spoiler from FFG for the next pack, Journey's End, and it looks like we are going to be able to continue getting exclusive spoilers going forward. There hasn't been an exact timeline set. I haven't seen any other cards yet. But everything looks ironed out well enough to say you can look forward to more spoilers here. So,
like, what kind of spoilers are we talking about? Are we talking about, like, the 6th chapter pack of the Songs of the Sea that's currently coming out? Are we talking about something farther down the road?
Well, at the moment, that's all we have right now, is one from the 6th pack of Song of the Sea. But it looks like going forward, we'll be able to get some from future packs, say the King's Road cycle, as we move forward through that cycle.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm pretty excited about that. We'll be sure to let you guys know and properly hype each of those episodes whenever FFG does send us another card. But I'm pretty excited that they are expanding their spoilerage and kind of letting some of the other groups spread some extra word out there. I like the buzz it generates, you know?
Yeah.
So we have our first one.
Indeed. You want to lay that one on us, Greg?
Yeah, for anyone who has not gone to look at our Facebook page, you should be able to head over there now and see the visual templating of this particular card. What we have is a dual house, Randall Tarly, Baratheon and Lannister, 4 cost, 3 strength, military power, traits are Lord and a Captain with a War Crest. It's got the melee keyword in response. After you declare Randall Tarly as an attacker, choose any number of House Tyrell characters to gain vigilant until the end of the challenge.
Hmm. That's awesome.
I'm actually pretty excited about this.
Okay, well, I mean, let's just think how, when we think of House Tyrell characters, what's the first ones you're thinking of?
Marjorie. Arrogant Contender.
See, I'm thinking.
Wait, you thought of back up. You did not think of Arrogant Contender first.
No, I didn't. I thought of Marjorie first.
You thought of Arrogant Contender second. Like, he would have been last for me. Sorry, Brett.
Really?
He would have been last.
Even though you know Brett and you see his face all the time and think about, wow, Brett's card is just a hair away from being, you know, solid. That didn't come to mind at all?
Well, see, that's where we disagree. I don't believe it's a hair away from being solid. I think it's a good chunk of Texas away from being solid. So,
solid? Like C range? I'm not talking great here.
I guess I don't think of C as being a solid card. I think of solid as being a card that finds its way into a deck I'd make. And, well...
Well, Greg refuses to play with cards that aren't A's.
Pretty much.
Yeah,
or
I respect
B's.
That.
I play with B's. We know I use 90-card decks. You can't have 90-card decks full of A's. But, no, not Arrogant Contender. Well... The first House Tyrell I think of is the Knight of Flowers.
Oh, yeah. Now, unfortunately, the non-kneeling one's not going to work particularly well with this, but the Joust one's pretty cool.
The Joust one has to be attacking alone, though.
Right. But here's the interesting thing.
Okay, the Joust one has to be attacking alone to get the extra power. And there's nothing to say you couldn't remove Randall Tarly from the challenge, but most of the time you won't. Most of the time you'd be attacking from both, with both.
Maybe. I mean, here's the interesting thing about Vigilant that got to me the more I was kind of looking at this and kind of absorbing Tarly's abilities here, is Vigilant characters can stand when a challenge is won, not necessarily one that they were in.
Correct.
Sorry, challenge is one on offense. So you could potentially, I don't know, say make the power challenge with the Knight of Flowers as a joust, whatever, he's knelt, make the military with Randall, then stand the Knight of Flowers. Say you've given the Knight of Flowers an intrigue icon through some reason, maybe court advisor, then now he gets to make the intrigue joust. Or you can play around with that various ways. Some of the other Tyrell characters, say, have an intrigue icon, like Marjorie. You could use her on the intrigue challenge to open your turn, you know, pull someone into the challenge and whatever. Make a military with Randall and whoever else. Give her vigilant. She stands. Now you've got her available to make the power challenge. It's pretty flexible, I think.
Would you guys consider playing this card in a deck with Olenna's Guard?
Yeah. Melee and Renown? That's something...
And House Tyrell.
Yeah, I noticed looking at this. I mean, Melee is for sure a thing for Tyrell right now. It kind of has become their house keyword, so to speak, you know? You know, Tarly himself does not have the House Tyrell trait, but he's one of their bannermen and interacts with them. He has it. Marjorie has it. What, 75% of the time or something? The Arrogant Contender has it. The Olenna's Guard has it. I mean, you start throwing a couple of those guys even into one challenge, the opponent's almost certainly not going to be able to win that when those strength bumps start adding in.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I think Randall Tarly's going to be pretty great, but with Marjorie, I think, yeah, that works really well. But also for me, I like running Flea Bottom and I like running Enemy Informers, and I think that's a neat way to stand your Enemy Informers. So
yeah, or even if you just needed to use Flea Bottom to put, say, Marjorie into play,
yeah.
Tarly could get her to stand back up and be able to participate in a challenge.
Yeah,
and he's got a Warcrest. Lots of handy uses for that. Captain Trait's not quite so great, but, oh well.
Yeah, I think it remains to be seen how much he'll be played. I mean, he's a four-cost guy. If it's out of Baratheon, you want your four-cost guys to often have renown.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see. I mean, I could almost see him being played more often out of Lannister to give them some standing effects.
Potentially. Of course, I ran a search just a little while ago. There are depressingly few Lannister Tyrells. We've got Arrogant Contender, Enemy Informer, Highgarden Cavaliers, you know how many decks that sees play in, and Marjorie Tyrell.
Yeah, that's not much.
Nope, not much at all. So yeah, I think you're probably going to want to go Baratheon if you go that way right now. But, hey, the last couple of these that we've seen have, well, aside from, sorry, now that I'm looking at it, Black Crown Knights was in the last pack and is House Tyrell, but some of the more recent Tyrell interactive stuff we've had has been dual house. So maybe that's a trend that'll continue. We'll get some more options there.
It would go good in a Baratheon or Lannister Maester deck running Copperlinks, where you turn your Maesters into a House Tyrell with the Copper Link.
Yeah, actually, yeah. That is pretty cool. And or if you can find a way to turn Tarly himself into a Tyrell, he can always, keep standing himself.
That's not a bad idea either.
Because then if you can get, off the top of my head what what you may want to do, but if you can make him a Tyrell and a Maester, you can start trading out some of those effects. Most of them are still limited to once per phase, but still gives you a lot of flexibility with the effects.
Yeah, so like I said, if you haven't done it already, go to the Two Champs and a Chump Facebook page where we have the card spoiled for your viewing pleasure. Daryl, this is not an invite for you to go post a picture of your unit on our Two Champs and a Chump page. I can just see you saying, check out this melee unit.
Yeah. For your viewing pleasure.
Find a soldier in Westeros.
Very cool. I like this card.
We had the Missouri Regional over the weekend.
Woo!
22 people.
Yep.
For the joust. Will, do you have stats on hand to kind of give our listeners, what some breakdowns were, just specifically of our regional?
Of our regional? Let me scroll over to that bad boy here. Now, this, of course, is the entire field that I'm looking at for the moment. We had three Starks, four Targs, six Lannisters, four Greyjoy, two Martell, and three Baratheon. I'll admit, I'm pretty surprised to see Lannister as the most populous house at our regional.
And you didn't even play it, Will.
I didn't. I jumped ship, and I was one of the two Martells. Least played house there.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Agendas, then?
Yeah.
We had three No Agenda decks, two House of Dreams, five Long Voyage, five Knights of the Hollow Hill, three Power Behind the Throne, one Black Sails, one Brotherhood, and two Wildlings. So Long Voyage definitely was tied, at least, for the most popular agenda at our event. But it was nice to see Knights of the Hollow Hill creeping back up. I've always had the feeling that our meta plays a little differently from some of the other area, or sorry, worldwide ones, really. And it's interesting to see now that we've got the Tulsa group nearby. In some ways, I think they're kind of similar to us in drifting away from the trends that we see everywhere else, you know?
Right. I mean, the Tulsa group had multiple players make our top eight, but two of them were playing Baratheon Wildlings. You know? And even though I like Wildlings and even played it at our Moon Boy, it's kind of an agenda and deck type that's been out of vogue for a while.
Yeah. Well, speaking of out of vogue, there was some interesting stuff here when we got to the restricted list, or at least I found it interesting and a little different for our regional. We had two Search and Detains, one Viper's Bannerman, four Fear of Winter, to make the most popular restricted card at our regional, two Castellans, two Hatchling's Feast, just one Cash, one Venomous Blade, two Fury of the Kraken, one No Quarter, one Targaryen Refugee, three Vowels, one Aegon's Hill, and one The Conclave. And it was the Vowels that really jumped out at me, because there have not been more than one Vowel played at any other regional. There have been seven total played at regionals that I have stats for. And, you know, just under half of them were all at our regional.
Hmm.
They were all barrel players, come to think of it.
Well, two of them were those Wildling decks, so that makes sense that in a Wildling deck they're playing Val. I'm pretty sure that they were playing the Laughing Storm. And mine, you know, that was my primary draw engine, was Val and the Laughing Storm, and I ran Black Sails. So if I had Val in my hand to open the game, I'd play Naval Reinforcements to go get Laughing Storm, or if I had Laughing Storm in my hand to start the game, I'd play Naval Reinforcements to go get Val. So I basically would just set up my my draw engine, or at least attempt to, on the very first turn of the game.
Well, here, tell you what, I'm going to let my voice rest a little bit, as I'm noticing my throat get a little more sore. How about you guys decide which one of you gets to tell a little about your day, or days plural, if you played in the melee first?
I'll go ahead and talk about my day. That's fine. I did play in the melee, which we decided wasn't going to be a part of the tournament. You know, I think everyone just played for fun. I don't even remember the prizes because I didn't win anything at the melee, at least.
Oh, there were actually quite a few prizes. I will pop in to say that. Thanks to Metagames helping us out with some donations, and thanks to Tim once again. I want to prop him for his donation. We had a couple HBO items, set of shot glasses, and went to first place. HBO Game of Thrones playing cards for the Sansa prize, and Meta threw in the nice FFG plastic deck boxes for everyone in the top four, plus $15 store credit for the winner.
Okay. Anywho, I started off by playing in the melee. I played a neutral Maester deck that was just super fun. So everything that didn't kneel or something like that was in the deck. And I want to say I got second at the first table, and then last, I think, at the second table I played in, or something like that. So it wasn't really pretty, but it was a blast, and it's a really cool deck. In the Joust, I played Greyjoy Long Voyage, and I had actually decided to play that deck probably 10 minutes before the tournament actually started. So going into the tournament, I wasn't sure what I was going to play. And I had a Stark Wildling deck built that I had been playing for a long time that was pretty good. But then, like an hour before the tournament starts, me and Brett are talking, and so we play some practice games. Actually, we only played one, and he was running Greyjoy TLV. I was running Martell TLV, and he just crushed that. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to build that. I'm going to play it. There was about a 10-card difference between mine and Brett's deck, mainly because I didn't have some of the cards. And it was a great deck. It was really powerful. First game, I go against a Power Behind the Throne player. I believe his name is Jacob from Tulsa, who he ended up making top 8, and he had a very good deck. The only, like, first turn, he flops River Blockade, and or whatever it's called. I think it's called River Blockade. And I flopped, my Raven Search plot. So I'm looking for my Ravens. And obviously I couldn't play anything. Or I could play the Raven because I had, like, a gold out. That didn't matter because second turn he played Fear Winter. And I played a zero-cost location because I'm an idiot. And second turn, I ended up playing Fear Winter, and I played a zero-cost location again. So that went really well. Needless to say, I did lose that game. It was like 13 power to 15 power, so I barely lost that game, but I definitely did. And I proceeded then to go on a 3-game win streak, which was pretty great, where I beat Greyjoy, Knights of the Hollow Hill, then Martell Brotherhood, and then Targaryen, Knights of the Hollow Hill, which was pretty good. And then I made top 8, so I felt really great, which I want to say is the first time I had made top 8 in a regional tournament, or probably any tournament, but Greg swears up and down that he crushed me last year, which I'm not sure if that's true or not. I don't remember making it. Then I had to face Greg, and Greg just crushed my dreams. So it wasn't even close. I spit out a bunch of locations, and that was that. But Captured Cog may be the best card ever. It was a blast.
I do like that card.
Yeah.
What's funny is I think that that's one of the cards you need to pull from your deck. But, Will, we have talked about it before that I am the dream killer, aren't I?
Yes. Yes, you are.
Yeah, for sure. So, the problem was I was running 2 naval escorts and 3 captured cogs. I probably should have been running 3 naval escorts and 2 captured cogs. I mean, but the deck was fantastic, drew a lot of cards, had some choke in there, had the winter element with my Wintertime Marauders and all the other good cards. I mean, it was, you know, there was nothing crazy out of left field in that deck. It just came down to naval escorts helping me keep my guys alive against burn, and obviously with the choke rolling around, and it was a blast. But I made a lot of mistakes in that tournament, so I even played a bandit lord, or a newly made lord rather, and didn't have a non-limited location of my opponents to crush, so I had to get rid of my own because I wasn't paying attention. But overall, it was a good tournament. I felt really good. So,
not too many Daryl's plays, so to speak. Not a full dirty dozen.
No, unfortunately, we can't make it to a full dirty dozen, but I think twice in a row in the same game to play a zero-cost location on Fear Winter counts as, as a dirty dozen in and of itself. So, you know.
All right, so on to me.
Sure.
Sure.
Well, as some of our listeners will remember, just a couple weeks ago, Will and I had a discussion talking about the difference between the Long Voyage and Black Sails, that is. And I talked about how I'd been working on some Black Sails decks, trying to make them work, and I decided I was just going to do it. I was just going to go balls to the wall at this tournament. So I had a Targ Black Sails deck I decided to play for Melee. It's actually a Joust deck.
I really
deck.
Like that deck.
Yeah.
It's actually a Joust deck meant to just go get Westeros Bleeds and then play Bleeds after you've won the Naval Enhancement Challenge. Well, of course, it's a Joust deck, so I just said, well, what do I need to do to make it Melee? I I changed out some plots, included the melee plots, and put in one copy of All Rain Waters, and that's it.
I didn't even realize you put Waters in the deck.
Yeah, of course I never drew them, so it didn't really matter. But so it was my Joust deck, change one card in the deck, and then change half the plots, right? So it did remarkably better than what I anticipated. I won my first table. I won my second table, and I had 14 power at the final table, but got second to Will. So it did really well. Very, very pleased with that deck. And well, I knew that I'd be playing Baratheon Black Sails for the Joust. I had known for a couple weeks. I knew the deck could change with the chapter pack that was released the week that we had our tournament. So, you know, I ended up, that chapter pack, it had a lot of good stuff for Bera, naval enhancement. It had, you know, both the Lysini Pirate and Corain Samanthes, or however you pronounce his name, and the neutral Dagger Lake Galley. So I included some copies of all those cards and ran with a 90 card Baratheon Black Sails, which I absolutely enjoyed playing, unlike the Tulsa Regional, which I played a deck that was not fun to play with. And ended up going 3-1 in Swiss, made the cut, and then went 3-0 in single elimination to win the tournament. My first game started off bad, playing Zach Bunn, Knights of the Hollow Hill. For the record, Zach Bunn might have had the greatest net gain by one Sorrowful Man ever in the history of Game of Thrones.
Oh, I do love this. Tell me more.
Okay. First turn, I get out my Laughing Storm and Val. I have a ton of income. Dale, the recycle of Seat of Power. I put out a bunch of stuff. I still have 4 gold left over. Zach has a card in Shadows. Now, Zach and I, before the tournament started, even had a discussion specifically about Sorrowful Man, saying if a Targ character has a card in Shadows and 2 influence standing, just don't spend your last gold on a character. Well, I had played an epic battle, the Battle for Shield Islands, so I'm thinking, you know what, I need to get out a big naval guy so I can make sure I win that naval, or so I can make sure I win a challenge during the epic phase. So I spend my last 4 gold on the Fleet from Lys. He kneels to influence, brings out the Sorrowful Man to kill my Fleet from Lys, which really sucked. But that's not the end of it. So I'm kind of frustrated about that. During the challenge phase, I'm still thinking a lot about this epic phase, and I don't really get my challenge phase right, but whatever. We get to the epic phase. I still have Dale left knelt. I have a Smuggler's Cove, and this is where mistake number 2 comes in, is I'd left my Smuggler's Cove standing, thinking I'd use it during the epic phase. So he attacks me with his Sorrowful Man to steal one of my locations with Battle Shield Islands. I look at Dale, and I'm like, okay, 2 strength from Dale. I'll pump him with Smuggler's Cove. Dale will die from Deadly, but I'll win the challenge, but I'll get something back from my discard pile. Of course, I kneel Dale and say, I defend with Dale. I reach down to defend with my Smuggler's Cove, and I literally whack myself upside the head and say, dadgummit, Craig! And any of you who've played with me knows what that sounds like. And was just pissed at myself because now I lose the challenge. Dale dies. Okay, he takes my Smuggler's Cove. And in the midst of me being so frustrated at my mistakes, I then forget to trigger Dale, leaving play to get back another Baratheon card from my discard pile. And I already had 1 or 2 in there because I'd used some locations. So needless to say, that one Sorrowful Man cost me a 7 strength army, Dale, the location to get back from Dale, and the location they stole. Now, granted, really that Sorrowful Man plus 3 idiotic plays on my part cost me all that, but still, it was all due to one Sorrowful Man. Well,
that's impressive.
Folks, that's how you start a tournament off on the wrong damn foot, okay? I do my best to stay in the game, but by turn 7, he ends up beating me. Next round, I play Kyle Vansel, and my deck does just the opposite. It comes out firing, and I won on turn 2. Yes, that's right. Second turn win. After that, I ended up playing Kristen, who was very pissed that I was playing her. And Kristen has this phenomenal flop, right? Like, 5-card flop with Bay of Ice and Longship Iron Victory, and Kristen's playing Greyjoy the Long Voyage. So I look at her board immediately, and I'm like, I know that deck. I know she's going to win initiative every turn, which means between Bay of Ice, Long Voyage, and Longship Iron Victory, she's going to draw 3 a turn.
That sounds awesome.
I'm like, so instead of doing my Laughing Storm Vow combo, which is my typical open the game combo, I decide I'm just going to go get anti-draw Stannis. So I open the game with Naval Reinforcements, go get anti-draw Stannis. Kristen does get one from Bay of Ice, and she gets one from the Long Voyage, but I marshal out Stannis so she doesn't get one from Longship Iron Victory. We ended up playing 4 rounds. I slowly was getting the advantage, and on the 4th round, I played Naval Superiority. I won a 3-claim military challenge, which cleared her board. I won a 3-claim entry challenge, which cleared her hand, and then I got the rest of the power off of her house. Now, the game wasn't over then, but after that 4th turn, she ended up conceding because she was like, you know, you already have a board full of dudes. I can't remember if she had already played her Valor or not, but she just said, this game over, Greg. You beat me. But I calculated it, and I said through those first 4 rounds, I basically prevented her from drawing 9 cards. 1 on the first turn, 3 on the second, 3 on the third, and then 2 on the fourth, because I would have won initiative on that 4th turn. Well, I did win initiative on that 4th turn. So I prevented her from drawing 9 cards with anti-draw Stannis.
That's a pretty big swing.
I'm sorry, folks, but 9 card swings are massive. That's, you know, I hear people complaining about things like negotiations of the Great Sept because you can get 4 cards back. Well, this was a 9 card swing, granted, over the course of 4 rounds, but still, it ended up being very big for me, very, very big. And then the last round, I played Justin Fox, and to be fair, Justin probably should have beat me. He was playing Lannister Power Behind the Throne. First turn, he kind of raced out. Second turn, I played Valor, which he just didn't think I would because I had Val on the board, not duped. But I went ahead and did it. I played Valor, killing a Cersei in a Conclave. He still put out another Conclave next turn, ends up getting Asha out, and still kind of goes to town for a while.
I love that deck.
I do everything I can to slow him down. I am literally I am wasting Dagger Lake Galley and Robert's Hammers just to prevent him from getting unopposed. Like, he's attacking with the Conclave, and, you know, I'm like, okay, he can stealth by my guy, so I'm Dagger Lake Galleying Willis so that Willis can get a naval enhancement on his intrigue so I can throw Willis in as a defender before he declares stealth, just so he doesn't get unopposed. And I'm having to do stuff like that just to slow him down, and then, like, kneeling Robert's Hammer to stand up Willis so I could do it again on his next intrigue challenge. So, like, it was just not at all the way I would normally play my deck, but that Power Behind the Throne deck can be so fast. I was just doing what I could to slow it down. And we got to the point where it was 13 to 14, excuse me. He was leading. We were about to reveal our 5th plot, and I knew whoever has higher initiative wins this plot. And I also knew the store had already told us that after 4 rounds of Swiss, they're cutting. So I knew if I lost this game, I'm out. And I knew if I won this game, I'm in. And I also knew whoever won initiative is going to win this game. But my highest initiative plot was Naval Superiority. Thankfully for me, Justin's high initiative plot had 2 claim. So he just played out Wit to see if he could cancel something good. I won initiative. I won the game.
Hmm.
So 3-1, I go into single elimination. Daryl told you a little bit about our game. Not to throw Daryl under the bus, but his first turn play was Fear of Winter, which I told him at the time I thought was a bad choice. He decided to go first, and he had Baylor black tied in hand, and I'm sure Daryl thought he was going to be able to win a challenge against me and, you know, do the two claim military. So I just searched for the fleet from Liss, played it, and was able to defend and win. And that game, Daryl's deck just drew 50% locations the rest of the game. Like, 50% of the cards he put in his hand, locations. So he was, he had a board full of captured cogs and iron cliffs and iron mines and local income, but he just couldn't draw characters, and I literally just steamrolled him. I played Art of Seduction on his Valor turn, stuck. I mean, it was one of those games where Daryl just kind of looked across the table throughout the whole thing, just like, I know you have this game, Greg, but I'm going to play this out anyway. So.
Was it a similar look to Kristen's Death Stare?
No. Kristen's okay. Death Stare is like, please give me a sword so I can put it in your gut. Daryl's was this resigned look of, I already know what's happening here. Blah, 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 blah. That's what Daryl's look was.
Yeah.
Is that how you would describe it, Daryl?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the sense of just there was nothing I could do. The amount of draw you were getting with Val and the Laughing Storm, and it was over. It was over. There weren't enough characters. I could have drawn everything. I mean, it didn't matter. First turn fear winner. That was bad. That was a mistake. It happens. You learn. I learned from it. If I could go back, I probably would have ran Search and Detain in that deck instead. But it was great. It was a great tournament. So.
Next turn, I play Xylar, again playing Greyjoy Long Voyage. Xylar gets the choke on me early. He goes first on the first turn, makes it winner, gets the spar out, and has an Ice Fisherman, right? So I'm going to only be able to count one gold. Well, this is the power of that Greyjoy Long Voyage deck, is I still played like 8 gold worth of dudes. No joke.
Yeah.
Seat of Power for a guy, for Dale. Trigger Dale, get Seat of Power back. Play Seat of Power for the Laughing Storm. Kneel a Reducer and my one gold for Val. Get another Reducer off of Val. I mean, I still put like 4 guys on the board on the first turn.
Yeah.
Even though I counted 1 gold from Xylar's Choke. And so the fact that I was just able to put so much on the board, again, I saw Xylar's Valor coming on turn 3. He played it. I Art of Seduction. He was stuck on Valor for 2 turns. And that game ended up going 5 plots, and I won on the 5th turn, I'm pretty sure. So it was one of those games where, even though it took me a little longer to win with the deck, I still felt in control, you know. And you know, anyone who ever plays with Xylar knows that Xylar can be kind of loud and boisterous. And the fact that he wasn't loud and boisterous kind of told me that he knew, you know, even though he was doing everything he could to try and stop me, I think he kind of knew that game was not going his way. So,
man, you seem to cause these odd reactions in players pretty often.
I don't, Kristen's Death Stare is not odd. That's actually kind of common.
Well, I think it's just, you know, it's something about the way that Greg plays. The little things, I think, are the things that break your heart the most while playing Greg, because you'll be running like a choke deck or something, and he figures out what you're running, and he takes the steps necessary to combat it. Like, one of the things, Greg would do against choke decks, like, you'll do your action, whatever it is, if it's playing a Raven or doing something like that, and then he'll be like, okay, I'm going to discard my Seat of Power or something so that you can't drop a Bandit Lord in and crush it. And so after every, you know, action you take, he'll be like discarding this or kneel this Reducer just so that your choke isn't going to have as much of an effect. And, it's just things like that. And it's demoralizing.
Daryl knows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's always a step ahead.
So last game I played Ben Terpstra, who was playing, you know, the latest incarnation of his Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill. That game I opened with Art of Seduction, and he played Time for Ravens, went and got a Black Raven, which honestly The extra gold for me was helpful all day, but he needed it for his burn effects and stuff. And that was, anyone watching that game will probably attest to the fact that I had this amazing board position all game, like two or three or four or five guys out. Quite often they were duped up, you know, just crazy board position. And Ben just played his deck the way that Targ deck is supposed to play, you know, other than the fact he never drew Rhaenys' Hill, which I know he really wanted, but he just did every little thing he could to stop me from winning, you know, and it just always felt like I'm just one awesome, massive turn away from just running away with the game, like really just winning the game in one turn. And yeah. I have to admit, I made a couple minor mistakes. People watching might have noticed, but like I forgot Davos had melee twice. I attacked with Davos. He lowered Davos' strength by two, defended with a one strength character. So I thought it was like 1-2, and I just completely forgot about his melee twice. And that quite possibly could have won me the game earlier. And there's Dodd, who was watching the game, said I forgot my own vigilant on Davos once when I had a Banner of the Stag on him. So there's a few things that might have allowed me to win faster, but it was one of those things that I had 14 power going into turn 7. I had to play my Valor. I have Fiery Kiss in hand, and so I play Fiery Kiss just saying, what's my biggest strength renowned guy? And I went and got Renly, and it was enough. So pulled off the win on turn 7. I was actually 6 cards from being decked, so a lot of people have asked me, like, Greg, like, don't you think 90 cards is too big? Heck no. I would not go any smaller than 90 for that particular deck. I feel quite strongly that in a deck that can draw as much as that one can with Val and Laughing Storm, that you minimum is 90 cards. And I'm not going to doubt anyone that says they want to play more than 90. So
just for comparison's sake, Greg, how many cards was the Black Sails Targ deck?
Probably about 86, 87. It was a little less, not much less, but a little.
Okay, cool. But yeah, I was watching that last game between you and Ben. It was crazy.
Yeah.
You got so much card advantage out of those damn royal entourages. They just wouldn't leave the board no matter what Ben would do.
Yeah, Ben would. First, you know, I'd march to the wall, get rid of Ben's character, get rid of my royal entourage. I'd play Lord, bring my royal entourage back. Ben would bring out Varys, hit a royal entourage because that was his only choice at the time. I'd play a lady, bring Royal Entourage back. He'd burn it down on a threat from the north turn. I'd play a lord or lady another turn, bring Royal Entourage back. You know, they were awesome.
Oh, yeah, they did a lot of work for you.
And what's funny is they've been available since the core set, right?
No, not the core set. What? One of the first couple cycles.
Oh, were they in the bear box?
Oh, no, they were well before the bear box. I can do a little search real quick here. See what I can find out.
Okay. I could have sworn that they were in the core set, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I'm thinking here they are. Yeah, the little ship was the Kingdom of Shadows, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Or whatever the heck that... King's Landing Edition. There we go. Sorry.
King's Landing Cycle.
Yeah. Yep. Almost couldn't think of the actual name of the set. So, yeah, they were from an early cycle.
So, anyways, they were phenomenal. And I'm kind of surprised I just haven't seen them get played more often. Maybe it's just because Bera in general doesn't get played as often. But they were money for me all day. I love the Royal Entourages.
I think maybe it's just because Bera in general doesn't see much play. I think you're right. Back about the time when we just had like the core set and this little bit of stuff, they saw more play back then, I remember. Because, you know, it felt like more people were trying things out and playing Baratheon at the time.
Yeah, so I really liked them. Honestly, I just felt my deck in general had income acceleration with Seat of Powers and Dale. And really, Royal Entourages are income acceleration. You're putting a 3-cost character out for free. you know, or three strength character out for free. I felt like it had phenomenal card advantage. Vow, the Laughing Storm, the Black Sails Agenda, the Summer Sea Corsairs.
Dale.
I felt like it had a ton of card advantage cards. It doesn't have a lot of control, but it has more control than some bear decks are in the black cells, the location, which, you know, could lock up a beefy character, you know, potentially. And it probably did in a few games. I just don't remember offhand now. And, of course, March to the Wall and Valor in there, you know, two control plots. Melisandre's Schemes is actually one of the best card advantage cards in the game right now. Just a phenomenal plot. It has some location destruction, which I didn't need all day. There was very few times there was a problematic location, but I knew that if there was one, I could go search the hold for Salador San and blow it up. Not all of them, but a lot of them I can hit with Salador San. So I don't know. I just felt it did a lot of things. It probably was not even as toolboxy as I can tend to build decks. Like, I had people saying, well, shouldn't you put Bastard in there? Shouldn't you put Milk of the Poppy? And I'm like, those are okay cards. I understand they're silver bullet cards, but I don't play those in normal decks. And my one condition for building this 90-card deck was, if I'm going to put in a silver bullet, I have to ask myself, is this a card I'm willing to put in a normal 60-card deck? So, like, I had one copy of Nightmares as kind of a silver bullet. Well, Nightmares is a card I'm willing to put in. I don't know why there's a difference, but for me personally, Milk of the Poppy and Bastard aren't cards I put in decks. So I was not going to put it in this deck. So it was not as toolboxy as some people probably were expecting to see, like basically seeing silver bullets for every occasion you could find. And I just didn't end up doing it quite.
You didn't even need a lot of those silver bullets. I mean, I would be tempted in a Black Sails deck to run a single copy of Bastard, because it is good for a lot of kind of Voltron style matchups, and I still am okay with it against Maesters. But guess what we saw zero of at our tournament?
Ooh. Yeah.
Maesters.
Yeah, how weird is that?
Weird. Yeah, I mean, it's a little weird, but other than like Buzz out in Tulsa, I just not gotten a strong feel that the Tulsa meta is a big Maesters meta. And, you know, obviously our meta made the shift with so many TLV decks. I mean, all five of those TLV decks were local people, right? No, four of the five. Four of the five were local, Springfield people. So I think our meta just kind of made the shift to TLV, and so I guess I'm not real surprised that there were no Maester decks.
Hmm.
I had one ready to play, though.
Oh, I know. I really figured you'd play it.
I know. To be honest, I love you guys very, very much, but I was giving you that misdirection for 2 weeks.
I mean, you...
Imagine that.
Actually, I think you were working on that misdirection longer than that. I think you had to have been working on it for the last, like, 3 years. Because I'm pretty sure... Didn't you play that deck the last two regionals we had?
No, not
or
the last
a variation just, on it?
No, I played the Greyjoy Maesters at last year's regional. I played Lanny Maesters, the regional before that.
Hig wants to know why I didn't play the Wildling deck. When he's like, man, you should play that.
honestly, Daryl, that Wildling deck would have been a lot better against my Black Sails.
Yeah, I just don't think, compared to the rest of the board out there, it just, oh god, the deck took so long to win. It's crazy.
We had two Wildlings in the top eight.
That's true.
Well, so anyways, that's my tournament experience.
Maybe.
Very nice.
I guess that brings it on to me then, huh? We'll see if I can make it through this one with a minimum of coughing. So on Friday night, we had the melee portion, and, you know, for some reason this time, I just didn't really feel like building a separate deck. I'd been building and trying and scrapping so many decks for the past, like, month and a half before our regional. For the Joust portion, I just didn't feel like building another one. So I just grabbed the Power Behind the Throne Lanny deck that I've been working on off and on with the Conclave as my restricted card, and just decided to play it in Melee since the Conclave was restricted in both formats and made things pretty easy there. And it worked out pretty well for me. First table, I wound up with Greg and Kristen, which was a little awkward. And, shoot, who was the fourth person at that table, Greg?
Man, I just don't remember.
Yeah, me either. There was a fourth person at that table. I just can't put my finger on who it was. The game went all right. Greg wound up snatching that one away. Oh, it was Kyle. It was Kyle. Because I was set to run away with the game three different times, and Kyle Vansel crushed my dreams each time. And so Greg managed to get that one.
How many times did I pull off bleeds in that one? Just once?
Yeah, just once that I remember, at least. So that one was interesting. I played Negotiations, the Great Sept, in Melee, which I don't think I've really seen or heard much about lately, but I mean, it is another deal-making plot, which is pretty cool. So I do like that, whatever else, whatever other issues it may or may not have. Next round, I wound up playing once again with Kristen, which was interesting. Her cousin Robin and Dodd. That game went considerably better for me, and I managed to sneak off to a win despite Kristen stabbing me in the back. yeah, go figure there. So, in fact, if I remember right, she didn't have any intrigue icons. So I think she's the one I challenged for the win.
For the record, I just find that incredibly awesome that you had to play with your girlfriend at her first Melee event.
And second Melee. She played at Moonboy.
Oh, she did? Okay, I couldn't remember if she played there or not. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so you had to play with your girlfriend at the same table twice in a row.
Yeah, exactly. And I learned very quickly that she's perfectly willing to work against me as well, as long as there's not someone around for her to hate on more, like, say, Greg. So that brought me to the final table, which was me, Greg, Wes, and Danny. So I was a little worried about that one because there were two decks running around then at that table with kind of the extra challenge shenanigans. Wes was playing Greyjoy. I don't remember now what agenda he had. It might have been a TLV.
Yeah, he was running TLV, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, the game went well, got set up pretty quickly. Danny, unfortunately, just got hosed even after her mulligan, and we wound up clearing out her board. She just couldn't really get the dragons together, but she did get a fairly sizable resource base. So the turn that I'm set up, I want to say this was maybe turn three, that I think I'm just going to blow through a win with Asha and Cersei, and I think, was it two conclaves? And maybe just one, and a half a dozen other characters, or something like that. And I am going first. It just looks like I am set for the win. And I can't figure out anything that could just completely bone me until it rotates around to Danny for marshalling, and she counts up her gold. Or, well, gold and reducers, anyway. And I'm like, what in the world is she going to do? Turns out she...
Oh, yeah, by the way, Will, before you say what she did, Danny had said, I've got this covered.
Oh, yes. Yeah, because you guys were like, you know, there's nothing we can do. Or, well, you were trying at first and couldn't figure out anything you could do. And Danny's like, no, I've got this. Yeah. So I was trying to figure out what in the world she could possibly do. And then, bam, she drops Balerion at full cost. None of that darn dragon lore shenanigans. She just straight up plays him. And Did she marshal last that turn?
I don't remember if she did or not. I'm pretty sure she must have, because I believe she and I were the only ones with standing characters, because I had a dragon on the board.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It was like her Balerion and your, I don't know, Viserion or Rhaegal. I don't remember which one it was now.
Yeah.
So that shut me down hard. You tried to push for the win on that turn then, and with a little careful help talking to Wes about challenges and stuff, we stopped you at 14 after you won dominance, right?
Yes.
So we go into the next turn, and I think I am once again gonna be set on going forward. And I get to go first, and I try to make an intrigue challenge against Danny, and Greg kneels his the Dagger Lake Galley to give his Daenerys Targaryen an intrigue icon to jump into the challenge and defend.
No, as an attacker.
Oh, as an attacker, that's what it was. Yes.
Yeah, we played the rules wrong.
Yes.
Or I played the rules wrong.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Fortunately, I had been browsing forums just a day or two prior to that and saw, to kind of my surprise, that, oh, wait, you can only jump in if you are already the attacker or defender, which somehow hadn't registered to me before. So when Greg did that, I called him on it, we grabbed the rules, and I narrowly avoided Greg stealing the game away from me there.
For the record,
yes.
Had I top decked a Balerion, not Balerion the Black, Balerion the Location.
Right.
I would have won in marshaling phase.
Oh, yeah, because you were also saying, like, oh no, there's one card I could use, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And after the game, you said something about Balerion. This was after Danny had played the kneeling Balerion, the character. And I was Balerion like, oh, I didn't even realize you had a copy. And you're like, no,
Yeah, had I, you know, that ambush plus the character gains a power would have put me at 15, and that would have been the sweetest way to win a melee game.
So, yeah, it was good. The second most highlight there, I think, was probably flipping Outwit in melee on the second turn in order to cancel someone's Valor and save my fat board of characters.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool, too, because I guess nobody else was running Valor other than Wes.
Yeah, I was running... No, I think I had even pulled out Wildfire because my plan was just win Enable Enhancement and just go get bleeds. So, and you, I mean, and Will played it with me twice. And trust me, Will was always scared of that bleeds. Always.
Oh, yes.
I think Will did the majority of his entry challenges at me.
Yeah, both games we were at the same table. So, yeah, it was a fun event. I enjoyed the melee quite a bit. For the joust, however, like I mentioned in passing there, I had been back and forth on decks and had a hard time deciding, and I just couldn't get anything that clicked quite as much as I wanted to. I was trying, you know, at about the last minute, trying to decide if I should go ahead with just playing the Brotherhood again or maybe just playing that Lannister deck, which thankfully I didn't play it in joust because Fox messaged me at the last possible moment that he was going to turn up for the tournament and needed a deck. So I just handed him the exact same deck that I had played in the melee. But what I did wind up doing Friday morning before coming into town, I built a Martell Long Voyage deck. And wound up deciding to play it in the end. It had been built from the leftovers or starting point of a Knights of the Hollow Hill build I'd been working on. So I kept most of that and focused on a lot of the influence-based control, of course, the Red Vengeance and Prince's Wrath and Words Are Like Wind and things like that. And
Words Are Like Wind?
Words Are Like Arrows.
Oh, okay.
Apologies. Yeah. And that, I think, worked out pretty well. Even with the kind of flukes of the 85-card deck, I don't think I was ever in a spot where I didn't have influence to afford what I had in my hand. Frequently, I had influence available to use more than one effect. Yeah. So, there were a few things I threw in there, wound up playing the Viper's Bannerman, because I kind of hemmed and hawed on what my restricted card was going to be. It had been Orphan of the Green Blood when it was a Knights of the Hollow Hill build. And I wound up saying, well, no, I think I want a little more extra card advantage that's not actually a draw effect. So I wound up going with the Viper's Bannerman, a choice that I regret in the end. I really only saw it maybe twice all day, and I think played it once all day. So I think if nothing else, the Orphans would have been better on setup. So those would have been nice, or even my old standby Venomous Blade. Also, I'd been, especially with the Prince's, the Viper's Bannerman in there, I'd been looking at some different events, trying out Blood for Blood, which I've always liked, even since the CCG days, and never really had the opportunity to play them to good effect in the LCG. But I thought, hey, if I've got these 7-string guys that are going to die, maybe. Unfortunately, the new pack, Captain's Command, came out right before our event, and I needed to find room to cut some stuff, and pulled those in the end for Desperate Measures. So they remain unplayed in tournaments by me. On the flip side, Desperate Measures turned out to be awesome. Didn't think it would
Hold
be
on,
a bad
Daryl,
goal.
Are you dying?
No, I hiccuped.
Okay, just wanted to make sure that wasn't you choking.
Yeah, no, we're good.
Oh, thank goodness.
Sorry.
No problem. So, first round, I wound up playing against Tim from Tulsa, who was playing a Lannister Knights of the Hollow Hill build. That game didn't go particularly well for me. Thought I was going to get back into it a couple times and didn't quite get there. I don't really remember anything particularly fun to report from my deck in that game, other than it was good installing him out until we were the last game playing. Though he had some fun tech in there again out of that last pack, using, I think it's Judged by the Father to get characters back, so he could keep using Heralds over and over. So that was pretty cool. Second round, I went up against Jeff Harris from Kentucky, who plays and podcasts for Netrunner with Dodd. He had been over in Tulsa before, which actually had been, if I remember right, his first Thrones tournament. But he made the top 8 over there, so I wasn't quite sure what to expect. He was playing a Targ House of Dreams deck with Aegon's Hill, which wound up being very quickly frustrating to strip characters out of my hand, I realized, because I could just only play so many since I was getting that extra draw out of TLV. So he definitely had targets all but I think one turn to strip out of my hand. On interesting play side, I did have the chance against him to kind of fake him out and use my own Ghost of High Heart, since I was first player, and discard a Dark Star from my own hand before he could Aegon's Hill it, thus putting the Dark Star into play and drawing myself a new card. He just could never quite get there. I kept expecting some kind of burn to back up his board control against what made it to the table, and he just never really seemed to hit on any. So between the Dark Star and the claim raising, gold token collecting Red Viper, I ran away with that game pretty quickly. Next round, wound up against, let's see, what was his name? Alex, I believe, from Tulsa, who was playing a Stark No Agenda deck, who got out my brain's shutting down here. The Dreadfort, quickly. No, not Dreadfort. What is it that searches? the top three when a character dies?
Harrenhal,
there we go. Yeah, got out of Harrenhal quickly, got out Mage, and was starting to look pretty scary, but he was terrified of my Ario Hota, the discard the top five, and kill a character after he loses. So that one went okay. Don't remember too many specific interesting details from it, other than, again, the Viper was pretty important. I think I had the Viper by my first marshalling, I had the Viper at least in my hand by the first marshalling of every game I played that day, which feels very odd for an 85-card deck, even though I had three copies of them in there. All right, fourth round, I played against one of the Arkansas guys, Wes, who was playing a Lanny Power Behind the Throne deck. He got out a Lannister Iron Throne pretty quickly, which was definitely causing me a little bit of hassle, but managed to play around it. He got me good with quite a few challenges there. But I managed to slowly grind it out. He didn't really have any influence, so the Merchants of the Green Blood wound up actually being really handy for me to strip intrigue icons from Cersei and things like that. So really the icon control saved me from him being able to rush through to a victory. And then once I got him slowed down with the actual rush characters, I was perfectly fine with letting him win challenges here and there so that I could drop gold tokens on my Red Viper and start swinging back. So managed to take that one out, went 3-1 in the Swiss, made the cut, and wound up paired against Jacob from Tulsa, who was also running a Lannister Power Behind the Throne deck. I expected more of a rushy build out of it. Turns out it was more of a control-y build with Enslaved and things of that nature. But I think what really got me, what wound up getting me in that one, I think, was my inability to just learn my lesson and keep an hand rather than trying to take a mulligan. That's got me into trouble several times. And in an 85-card deck, it's that much more likely to get you into trouble. So it went from to terrible. I think I set up like a Dornish paramour and one of the little influence dudes, something along those lines. Flipped a 5-gold plot to try and kick things off there in marshalling and see what I could do, and he promptly opened with blockade. Yeah, so I just pretty much was not in that game. So it was an unfortunate end to my run through that day.
Hey, I have a question for you, Will.
Yeah.
How often did you use Greenblood Merchant on your own dudes?
During that day, I actually don't recall if I did. I know I had played a test game or two with that deck against Daryl before the melee on Friday. And if I remember right, I did use it to give Ariane a military icon
when I was
playing against Daryl, so that I could get that extra claim. But I don't think I wound up doing it during the joust Saturday.
Okay, I was just wondering.
It is a really, really nice option to have, though, especially when you've got Ariane in the deck.
Yeah. She's a pain in the ass. Yeah.
So yeah.
Were you running the discard Hota?
Yes, I was running the discard Hota. He was useful for me in the game against the Stark No Agenda guy, so that was nice. Otherwise, I'm not even sure I actually saw him. But speaking of discard, I really learned what living the dream is, though. Using desperate measures to search out, I don't know, some card you desperately want. I think maybe I grabbed a Red Vengeance off of it or something along those lines. And then the Dark Star being one of those other four cards that would be going to the discard pile. So you get ahead. So
I was just going to say, one cool thing I would want to do with that deck and if you never got to do it, that's too bad, is giving that Hotaw an intrigue icon. And he is vengeful. So yes, you can defend with him in all three challenges, discarding all the cards.
Hmm. Yes, sir. And actually, you know, thinking of discarding stuff still, and now that I'm on the influence track, a card that I was running in that deck, which was a leftover from the Mats the Hollow Hill build, that I don't really ever see any of, but I think was kind of an all-star for me in any game I got him out, was Spear Phalanx. That is a great deterrent. People are afraid of that card.
Yeah. I don't even remember what it does, dude.
It's a five-cost Martell army, four strength, military and power icons, deadly. I think it may have a Warcrest as well, but it does. Don't quote me on that. And then says, response, after you lose a challenge as a defender, kneel it, and kneel three influence to discard one of the characters that attacked.
But you have to kneel a five-strength army and three influence?
You do. But it when works. People are attacking with Cersei, for instance, they get pretty worried that you're just going to chuck her.
Yep. Okay.
And he's got the deadly to force through challenges on offense if you need.
Yeah. Interesting.
I was happy with him all around.
Yeah, when we first saw that card, we thought it was pretty much garbage, but now we know that it's only halfway garbage.
It has its uses. There were definitely a few cards I'd tweak in the deck now, but I do think I would keep that one.
Very interesting.
Yeah. That was a pretty interesting deck that Will was running.
I'll probably post up a deck list at some point once I get it all transferred over to online somewhere.
And speaking of, my deck list was posted by me on the Two Champs and Chump site on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, I think I've got another topic that I wanted to hit on semi-briefly, just to kind of update folks on the regional stats. I sure don't want to just go through every single card ad nauseum, but I think we do have quite a few updates for folks now that we've added, and I think I'm probably going to post these Excel files up to, I don't know, Google Docs or something along with the episode so that folks can take a look at them as well and see what we've got. I've been able to add several tournaments lately, not the least of which, I think, is the Days of Ice and Fire that FFG had up at their event center, which I think really really adds a lot of information, that is. So a lot of the stats, I think, wind up looking pretty much the same. Looking at the field as a whole, you know, Stark is still the most popular, Targ in second place, Lannister in third right now, all of those at 100 appearances or above. There has interestingly been exactly one neutral house appearance that I have so far. And of course, I only have stats for around half of the total regionals this season. I've got 25 to 29, depending, because I was able to find some info like top X or winner for some regionals, but not the full field, things like that. No agenda, still the most popular agenda, so to speak, option for the whole field at 105. Interestingly, even with all this brouhaha over the Long Voyage, House of Dreams still in the number two spot with 84 appearances. Long Voyage at 79, so it's definitely creeping up. Knights of the Hollow Hill is in a somewhat more distant third place of the actual agendas at 66. But if we move up to say houses that made the cut, some of those numbers kind of reverse. Targaryen still on top, making the cut. Targaryen second there. Greyjoy tied with him. Agendas, though, Long Voyage jumps up to first place beyond even No Agenda. It's got 44 appearances. House of Dreams in second with 28, and No Agenda with 27 appearances. Bizarrely, Maesters in the one, two, three, in the fourth place for total appearances. I realized I accidentally kind of skipped over restricted cards there, because in the field overall, we do have three of them tied for the most appearances at the moment, which is kind of fascinating. Mirror Reed, The Maester's Path, and Search and Detain all tied right now as most popular restricted cards out of the field as a whole. Out of what I have for the top cut, and I'll admit, folks have not posted all that much info for the top cuts as far as things go. It's basically just Days of Ice and Fire, and then the last few weeks' worth of tournaments that have had info for top cuts. Still, things reverse kind of strangely, and Viper's Bannerman shoots to the top out of what we've got available for restricted cards making the cut. Maester's Path and Log Lance is tied right behind that, I think, probably doesn't surprise people too much. And our regional, in particular, is responsible for bringing Val up into the top 10. So,
you're welcome.
Yeah, exactly. If we look at straight-up wins, though, Targaryen, still the most popular winning house at 8. Baratheon in second place with 7, so that's an interesting switch for a house that folks have considered to be the worst for a very long time. Stark at 6, Lanny at 4, Greyjoy at 2, Martell at 2, and poor neutral has won none. Agendas, however, is kind of interesting. You'll see on this spreadsheet, The Long Voyage is the only agenda with double-digit winning numbers with 12. Maesters at 3, No Agenda, House of Dreams, Knights of the Hollow Hill, Wildlings, Black Sails, and Siege, all at 2, and then Power Behind the Throne and Treaty with the Isles of each one, 1. And, of course, I have even less info on restricted cards for winning decks, so that's not even really worth talking about. But as far as that info goes, it gives us some interesting percentages, I think. If we're looking at, okay, say, the overall field, since the Long Voyage is kind of the hot topic at the moment, Long Voyage here is only 14% of the overall field. But if you move on to the top X agendas, it jumps up to 22% of those. And if we move on to the winners, 41% of all all regionals that I have info for are won by a deck using that particular agenda. Maesters in a rather distant second place with 10%. So there is a decent spread as far as quite a few different agendas have won regionals. A lot of those have won two apiece, but creeping up towards half of the field won just by that Long Voyage.
Prior to this weekend, was there any other events that had Black Sails win?
Yes, there was one other Black Sails win that I have tagged down here. Let me see where that one was. Warsaw in Poland.
Oh, okay.
Ah, good old Warsaw.
Yes.
You know, I thought for a second that was like a city in Kentucky. I didn't even think about Europe.
Yeah. And, you know, I was fiddling around with some of the other numbers, just for anybody that's curious about some stats. I was just kind of curious about, like, performance for some of these agendas as far as the folks playing them, how well they're doing. So, for instance, if you're doing House of Dreams, you have a 33% chance out of course, folks running House of Dreams, to make the cut. You have a 2% chance of winning. TLV, for comparison's sake, jumps up to 55%. Slightly over half of all TLV decks played make it to the cut. And 15% of them win their tournament. That's 15% of the total TLV decks, not of those that made the cut. Maesters, however, nearly has as good a ratio of them making the cut at 53, but only a 6% chance of winning. Knights of the Hollow Hill, 30% chance on making the cut, only a 3% chance of winning. Power Behind the Throne at 23 to make the cut, 2% chance of winning. The Black Sails that Greg was talking about, only a 39% chance to make the cut, but a 7% chance of winning. No Agenda, which has so many appearances, only 26% of them will make the cut, and 2% win. Would you guess which agenda has the best percentages?
House of Dreams.
No. It's one I didn't mention. It's perhaps a surprise.
Okay.
Because, you know, you can already look at TLV at 55 and 15, definitely being much higher than all the others, aside from Maesters.
Kings of Winter.
No, uh-uh.
Wildlings.
No. Weirdly enough, Treaty with the Isles. 75% of the folks that played Treaty with the Isles made the cut. Huh. And a full quarter of the people that made Treaty with the Isles won a regional. Now, that's only four decks total. So three of them made the cut and one won a regional. But when you convert those into percentages, damned if that isn't a really, really good average.
It's really good.
God, we're just not playing the right decks. We need to be going all to Treaty to Isles.
Yeah, very possible.
I mean, I ran Treaty to the Isles in the warm-up at Gen Con, and I want to say I went 2-1. So
the problem is that's just too small of a sample size.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, when you have four people that play it, you know, and it did well, you know, made the cut three of those four times, it's such a small sample there that you truly do have to ask yourself who was running that deck.
Right.
You know, yeah. And if it's, and it makes a big difference if you know it's a top tier player. So.
Yeah. That's mainly why I stuck to the top dozen or so agendas to kind of see how they are breaking down since they have that much larger sample size. And it still seems the numbers are skewed pretty heavily TLV's way. I think, I don't know, the most telling or interesting one to me was that it's the only one in the double digits as far as giving you good odds to win the tourney. Now, I mean, obviously there's always a lot of other factors that play into things, but I find the stats quite interesting. Do any of these seem like enough to be concerned about anything to you guys? Or this is just kind of it's a fluke. The meta keeps shifting with new cards coming out. Not a big deal.
What am I going to go first? I don't think there's anything to worry about necessarily. I think that our tournament was, I don't know. I felt like we had a lot of good stuff going on as far as variety went for the decks that were played. I mean, two Wildling decks, the Long Voyage decks, one Black Sails deck. I can't, one Power Behind the Throne. And I can't remember the other deck that made top eight in our tournament.
It was actually three TLVs.
Oh, was it
made
three?
Okay. Out of the five that were played. So that, and that was 60% of them made the cut.
Yeah, you know, it's a really good agenda. Yes, I know. I know. I said it sucked. I know. Okay.
Yeah.
I've made a living off of being wrong. Really, those podcast checks that come in the mail every week.
The other most popular agenda we had at our regional, that's all Hill, only 20% made that cut.
Yeah.
Pretty stark difference in their performance.
You gotta know what's up with when you're running Knights of the Hollow Hill. Like, you have to have a purpose with your deck, like, and you gotta get there. Cause just with being behind with that setup, such a big deal, so. Long Voyage is really not much of a reason not to, you know.
Greg, what about you? One agenda winning 40% of all regionals we have results for. Is that enough to be worried yet?
I'm worried about TLV. Yeah, but I, you know, it's not so much that I'm highly worried about it. It's more that it just clearly falls into the same imbalance that some other agendas have. And therefore, I think if they deserve to get restricted, then it does too. Whether it's Maester's Path, summer winter agendas, you know, it's obvious TLV does the same thing that those do, which is easy card advantage. I mean, heck, it's easier than the summer and winter agenda in regards to obtaining that card advantage. So if the thought is that, that those particular agendas are on the restricted list for that reason, then TLV seems to need to go on as well. And yeah, I mean, it may be one of those things that in one more cycle of cards, it becomes consistently easy to pull off the Black Sails agenda, and therefore Black Sails ends up on there as well. So who knows?
Yeah, I think it's kind of up in the air right now.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Black Sails go, its performance not too terribly different from the Maesters this year, so it's a pretty good performance, I think. All right. Well, that's enough to at least update folks, and then they can see the numbers themselves and let us know what conclusions they reach from them.
Anywho, moving on.
Yeah. This one I'll probably keep pretty brief, but I thought I'd see if I might attack something that we haven't done in a really long time on the show, the novels themselves. Now, after the regional, I was chit-chatting on Sunday with Kyle and Ben and Gorley over at Kristen's. And while we were outside of Kristen's talking there, we kind of got onto this topic, and it started me down a train of thought that I hadn't really explored before. Now, other folks might have done it online, but I haven't seen it anywhere before that I can remember. We were talking about the epilogue to, was it book 4 or book 5? Daryl, you're just going to have to be ready for some spoilers here.
Yeah.
Listeners, if you haven't read that far in the series, you should be ready for spoilers too. So, Kevin Lannister gets killed, right, by one of Varys' little birds.
Book 5,
okay. And it's, you know, basically because Kevin was going to fix the realm, right? And I've griped about this before that, well, Varys spends the first, you know, half of the series talking about, oh, you know, he's for the realm and he's sticking up for this or that, right? But if you're saying that, why kill the guy that was going to fix things? And it never really jived for me. And, you know, so the guys were talking about, well, he wants to put the Targaryens on the throne. And I'm like, well, okay, that's great, but why? Like, what's it matter? Like, it's just going to be years more of war, small folk, the realm being, you know, killed and shattered and whatever. And then, you know, what's he get out of the deal? Under Robert and the Baratheons, he was already as high as a eunuch like him could possibly hope to be in the realm as Master of Whisperers. And folks were like, well, he's friends with Illyrio. And I'm like, well, okay, but why does Illyrio help the Targaryens? Because Varys sent them there. Like, what does Illyrio get out of the deal? Don't know. We were trying to kind of, you know, narrow this or that down, and Gorley mentioned something about the Blackfyres that finally clicked for me here, because there's the Duncan Egg short stories, right? And Greg, have you read all three of those now?
I read the first two. I have not read the third one, but I did read a synopsis somewhere.
Okay. Well, you at least know enough that the Blackfyres keep coming up in those, at least.
Right.
And it's kind of a theme as far as who your loyalties are to, the Red Dragon or the Black, and, you know, things go back and forth. And Martin has said before, if I remember right, that the stuff going on in the Duncan Egg novels is going to have some connections to what's going on in the main story, right? And we see then that Bloodraven is in the third short story and then pops up in book five, right? The person that Bran goes and meets. So we were kind of wondering, well, have all the Blackfyres been killed? Maybe they weren't actually killed off. Maybe there's some kind of connection there. Well, this led us to a couple different places. If we're trying to figure out Varys' motivation, is it possible the reason he seems to care so much about putting the Targaryens back on the throne, when we can't see any possible real motivation for it, is that their family? He then is a Targaryen. It's about the only thing that I can think of that would explain his dedication to doing this, and, you know, this kind of long planning when he couldn't get any higher standing out of it, and it's not actually helping the realm as a whole. And thinking about those novels, or novellas, really, we see the first one, it's a pretty major plot point that Aegon, a Targaryen prince, shaves his hair, or shaves his head, rather, so that no one can see the color of his hair and know that he's a Targaryen relative. We've also never seen Varys' hair because he shaves his head. He's also kind of this master of disguise that we see. So, I don't know. It was kind of a mind-blowing thought to me. It would explain an awful lot. Which one he would be, how he would be related, I don't know. But then that led back to the Blackfyres, and there's that prophecy with Daenerys about the false dragon and all. And so there were some thoughts there that, well, if possibly they haven't all been killed off, how cool would it be if Aegon is actually a Blackfyre, and thus the familial resemblance and stuff, but would potentially still allow him to fulfill the false dragon part of the prophecy that most people think is him. He is a dragon, just not the legit line. So, there you have it. The theories that we were kicking around. The Varys one, I really dig.
You know, that's very interesting because, you know, the question is the story we've been given with Varys, you know, that he's basically some little orphan boy, right, that works his way up to the top of King's Landing. You know, what eventually would provoke someone that truly has that backstory to cross the sea? You know what I mean? Uh-huh. To come from where he came from and rise to power in a whole nother land. You know, where do you even get the ability to cross the sea if you're some poor orphan?
Yeah, and establish this network of spies and stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas if he had been some tangential member of the Targaryen family, even like a bastard child or cousin or something who had been, you know, in Westeros before, it would provide some of those opportunities.
Yeah, I kind of like that theory. I mean, granted, we'll never know, but because
you think Martin will die before he wraps it up, or you just don't think he'll ever tell us the truth?
I don't think. No, I think right if now. He were to actually write the books and finish them, that we'll get some closure on who Varys is. But
man, that would be a total just a mind blowing deal. Is if at the end of it, you know, Varys is on top and turns out to be a Targaryen or something. Because, oh man, that almost gives you rereadability of the series, you know, just to go through it.
Wait, did Daryl just say rereadability and he's never read the series?
Yes. Hey, I'm just saying. I am a slow reader, okay? It takes a long time.
Read all these parts about Varys and figure it out, but
I'm just saying you can for I'm people not who ready. Did. I've read like I got to like the second Bran chapter. I just couldn't
do it.
Oh my
goodness, guys.
I'll do it. I know. Robin's already done with the first book. Robin read the first book in less than a week.
like someone telling you to go watch a movie again who's never seen it for the first time. Yeah. You should go see The Avengers for a second time. But I haven't seen it yet.
Just saying. Like, I'm talking about, you know what, never mind. Fine.
All I get out of this is that Daryl should actually read the books. Though maybe yeah. we've just ruined everything for him.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
It's ruined. Kevin Lannister was my favorite character. I give up.
Hey, I was pretty sad when that happened.
Well, I guess we'll never know. I'll probably never know.
Yeah, I haven't had the chance to see or do much new outside of Thrones this last week because of last minute prep for the regional and stuff. So I'm just going to throw out props to Tim once again for giving us that money for some extra prizes. And it definitely went towards some beer and curly fries that disappeared at the bar far faster than I expected.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some props also to Metagames, I think, for throwing in extra prizes for both events we had, and just going above and beyond what I expected out of them. So, good job.
Yeah. I'd like to just take a minute and just prop just all the cool out-of-towners that showed up for our regional, because, you know, all those people are really awesome. And we couldn't have the tournament without you. Well, we could, but then there'd only be like four people there. So, you know, really cool. Big shout outs to Dodd and Ben and Kyle and Danny and Zach and the Tulsa crew and all those other guys. So it's just really just a fun group of people, you know, to have the tournament with and then go out and get boozed out and act like idiots. So.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Anybody else got a prop?
That covered me.
I have one more prop then. I've discovered a new band that I really enjoy. They go by the name of Geographer, and you should absolutely check them out. They're on Spotify and all that other jazz. They have a song called Kites that is really good, and Lover's Game. So you should check them out if you're into electronica / indie pop. It's really good.
Thanks, Daryl.
You're welcome.
Daryl's Music Minute.
There you go. I should start my own music podcast.
Oh, there you go.
Or maybe Sirius should just give me my own channel.
That sounds like an idea. That's a show I'd listen to.
Someone make this happen.
It'd be a bit like Howard Stern, only dirtier, I assume.
Oh, God. Dirtier than Howard Stern? Goodness. Unless he's cleaned up. I don't know. Danger Zone!